There's a rule in life. You're supposed to let other people fan your flames. You're supposed to let other people point out what you've accomplished, how good you are, or how great you are. You're not supposed to do it yourself. Let others do that.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. You have tuned in to another episode of the Straight Talk Podcast. I am your host, former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark. Thanks for joining. And please subscribe and tell your friends too. Like I said, there's no cookie cutter stuff here. I touch on issues that aren't as sexy as some of the breaking news headlines from the major media, but it's stuff that I believe the American people, at least the listeners in this podcast, should know about, because there's a lot more going on in Washington, D.C. than that news driven by the corporate media, who are, you know, interested in shock stuff and sexy stuff. And, you know, it's about ratings. And don't get me wrong, mine's about ratings too. I need listeners. But I'm not just going to touch on and talk about the stuff that everybody else is. How's that? It's a waste of your time. I would be wasting your time. And I don't want to do that anyway. A comment on the ongoing war between Israel and Hamas in the Middle East. And I want to bring you back to all of these calls for a ceasefire by Israel, the pressure mounting, including from the White House and all around the world, and the UN, that useless organization or entity, the United Nations, calling on Israel for a ceasefire, to which I've said to you over and over and over again, absolutely not. This job has to be finished. But anyway, I have an idea or a thought anyway that has not been mentioned and not talked about. And it's this. Why is everybody calling on Israel for a ceasefire? Why is nobody, and I mean nobody, and this hasn't been brought up by anybody except yours truly, why is nobody calling on Hamas to surrender? That would be the quickest way to accomplish a ceasefire, an announced unconditional surrender, raising the white flag by Hamas leaders. Lay your arms down, come out with your hands up, and say you will subject yourself or participate in a surrender meeting with Israel. Unconditional. Why don't you hear that? Nobody, Hamas started this. And of course, we continue to see all of the, you know, the scenes from Gaza and the women and the children, and they're hungry and they're suffering. And yeah, they are. A lot of it's their own doing. I saw a story the other day that pointed out that many Palestinians are now, once again, and in greater numbers, supporting Hamas since the war started. So that's why I said it's, you know, the suffering is, you know, they're co-conspirators in it. Part of it's their own doing. But anyway, I just find it interesting that Israel must come to a ceasefire, but Hamas doesn't have to surrender. That's what the call should be from the UN, from Joe Biden, from the White House, from Blinken, and from all these other world leaders. Stop calling on Israel to surrender and start calling on or a ceasefire and start calling on Hamas to surrender. That would end this war. That's how wars end, when one side surrenders. And we don't see that too much anymore, especially the wars that the United States involved in. That's why they're called endless wars. There's never any end to it. It just goes on and on and on with the bloodshed, with the money spent, the destruction. Because one side won't surrender. And that is the objective of war. Israel, the IDF, Israeli Defense Force, they get it. This is war. Netanyahu announced it. We're declaring war on Hamas. Hamas must surrender. Israel does not need to move toward a ceasefire. Anyway, enough of that. I'm going to do a little follow-up here in the next segment. I want to talk about a guy I'm not real fond of. I talked about it extensively in the last podcast, and sometimes I'll, you know, build upon the last podcast. And you know, the point obviously is it's not a trick. You know, it's kind of like reading a book. You can't just open it up in the middle and start reading and expect that you're going to know everything that I've talked about. It builds, sometimes the story builds upon something I've talked about in previous podcasts. So yeah, it is to encourage you to listen to this thing weekly so that you can stay up to speed with some of the stuff I'm talking about, because I'm not going to, for the people who listen regularly, and I appreciate you, I'm not going to waste your time or bore you by going over the whole thing again in a podcast that I previously talked about. What I'll do is brief it to lead up to the follow-up story, like I've done with the vacant buildings, federal buildings in Washington, D.C., the wasted space. I've given you follow-ups. But if you haven't listened to previous podcasts, you wouldn't know what the heck I'm talking about when I talk about a follow-up story. So, you know, that's kind of on you. And for the regular listeners, well, you don't have anything to worry about that you missed. You know, you might have missed. Well, what's he talking about? I don't get, where's he getting this from? What's going on here? Tune in every week and you'll know. Anyway, last week, the podcast, I talked about Kevin McCarthy, who announced his retirement and patting himself on the back of all the great things that he did. And he's moving on. He's still in the fight, all that nonsense. He'll go on to join some lobby firm and make millions of dollars. But anyway, story came out. This one of LA Times. Kevin McCarthy uses his PAC, Political Action Committee, to lavish cash on high-end resorts, private jets, and fine dining. So it says here, they're talking about this property. It's called the Tirania Resort, known for its ocean views, world-ranked spa, and villas that can command $3,000 a night or more. The property is less well-known as a gathering spot for federal elected officials and the campaign donors they wine and dine. So I want to start out in fairness to McCarthy. He isn't the only one doing this. He didn't start this. But he sure got his bite at the apple when he became the Speaker of the House. And even before that, he was still in a GOP leadership position. So it says here, but one politician was very familiar with the luxurious resort, former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. In 2.5 years, the Bakersfield Republicans Election Committee dropped nearly $250,000 at Tirania, the resort, with most of the money coming from a thinly regulated leadership PAC, a Times investigation has found. Now, I want to make this clear, too. None of what he's doing is illegal. But that's not the point. The point is how these federal officials who are supposed to be public servants, who are supposed to be serving us, we put them in this position to represent us. They go to Washington, D.C., and they live high off the hog. And I'm sick of it. And you probably are too. But see, this is the stuff that the stories you might miss if you're not listening to the Straight Talk podcast. This stuff's not going to be talked about on Fox News, Fox Business News, CNN, MSNBC, ABC. You're not going to find this story there. Because they're all doing it, both sides. So one reason why you won't hear the liberal media talk about it, even though it's a Republican, is because they know that their people are doing it too. Democrats. Why I've often referred to Washington, D.C. as this country club. This elitist, arrogant mentality of how they're living. This let them eat cake attitude when they go to Washington. So back to the story. It says, as he exits 2 months after his historic ouster as speaker, political obituaries tout McCarthy's skills as a prolific fundraiser on behalf of Republican candidates. Also setting him apart from other congressional leaders was his roughly decade-long pattern of using his majority committee PAC to spend lavishly on hotels, private jets, and fine dining establishments, according to the Times analysis. So it says here, from 2012 through June, this past June, McCarthy's PAC shelled out more than $1 million on hotels, private air travels, and eateries. The FE records show they still have to file reports with the Federal Election Commission, the FEC, but the FEC doesn't require detailed reports. So in other words, they can put, you know, if they spend $5,000 a week in just lodging and travel. Not where, not how much was food, how much was liquor, how much was this, how much was spent on spas. So anyway, what McCarthy spent was more than double the combined total spent by leadership PACs of the seven other lawmakers who've held the top House and Senate positions for their parties during all or part of that period. Unfortunately, this is a quote. Unfortunately, it's a bit of the Wild West, said Michael Beckel, research director for Issue One, a nonprofit organization that studies the role of money in politics. He said the group has deep concerns that politicians could use leadership PAC funds for their own personal enrichment. The FEC does not require politicians to disclose on the financial reports many details of such spending, as I just said, beyond the recipient, the date, amount, and general category of the expense. McCarthy's records do not say who stayed at or dined at Tirania, courtesy of the committees, and there are no breakdowns for how much the PAC spent per night for a room, and nothing about what type of room and how many were rented. The records offer few clues as to whether the spending was in connection with specific fundraising events or any other campaign activities. I want to say this again, because I want to be real clear on this. There's nothing illegal about what they're doing, but it doesn't pass the smell test. It stinks. The way these people are living, while their constituents back home are living paycheck to paycheck, paying higher costs for food, energy, home ownership, mortgages, rents. And these people go out to Washington and they're living like this. And then they come back to the district. They know you don't know what they're doing. They know you don't know about what I'm talking about today. And they come back, oh, we're doing a great job. Remember that op-ed McCarthy wrote in the Wall Street Journal I read last week? Oh, we did great stuff. Oh, we did this. We walked on water. Oh, we cured cancer. Oh, you know, I'm just being facetious here. But he's touting all these accomplishments. These people are living like kings and queens out in Washington, D.C. So it says here, over the last 2 months, the Times sent interview requests to McCarthy through his office and campaign organization and submitted a list of detailed written questions about spending by his committees. Congressman did not grant an interview, but after follow-up queries, a McCarthy spokesman replied in writing that the Tirania costs were for our annual event at the resort. Why are these things being held at these high-end resorts? What's, you know, why not, and I've said this before, how about a Holiday Inn Express to keep costs down? You don't forget, they're collecting, this money comes from donors. And then donors don't know this. And I'm not talking about the high-end donors, because those are the ones that are wined and dined at these places. I'm talking about the people who send their $25, the individual, to these PACs. They don't know these people are using this for this kind of stuff. So, you know, you look at all this and you know, I don't expect them to stay at the Budget Tel or the Red Roof Inn, but how about one of these middle hotels like, you know, the Marriott Courtyard or something? Those are decent hotels. I stay at them. Excuse me. But no, that's beneath them with other people's money. So it goes on to say there here, the FEC has called on Congress to rein in leadership PACs, but Congress has yet to demonstrate any willingness to do so. Well, no kidding. Why would Congress, who are the beneficiaries of a lot of this largesse, why would they want to end this? They get to go there on some of these weekends. They get invited to this stuff. Take the family along. See, none of this, you don't, what I'm saying here, you don't know that it's not happening. I'd take their entire family there. You wouldn't know. Because the reports don't require that kind of detail. So it says here, in a broader examination of campaign finance records, Pelosi gave, because I said both parties are doing it. I want to make that clear. Pelosi gave McCarthy a run for his money in private jet bills. She spent nearly $673,000 on them since 2020. On private jet bills. What's wrong with commercial? I don't care if they sit in first class. I have a problem with that. So it says here, but she did so through her campaign committee, not her leadership PAC, meaning none of the travel could be for personal reasons under the law. So under the law, if you do it through your PAC, it can be for personal reasons. So it goes on to say here in this story, the burst of Tarania spending began about a year and a half after McCarthy's wife, Judy, began working for the California Republican Party as a contact for high-dollar donors. You see why when I say our government is owned by the donor class and lobbyists. They give big money and then they get wined and dined. And why, the constituent back home, you don't mean anything to them. Don't let them kid you when they come back home. And they'll be coming home soon for their Christmas recess. Talking about all the great stuff that, oh, we're working hard for you, and oh, we're turning things around. Anyway, his wife was paid about $57,000 last year, according to the GOP spending record. See, their families and friends, this is nepotism. And then they were criticizing George Santos for doing the same damn thing, although it was coming from his campaign account, not his PAC, I think. They were lambasting him about some of the spending he was doing with campaign funds. They're doing the same damn thing. So it says, Florio, McCarthy's campaign spokesman, said in an email to the Times that none of the Tenaria expenses was related to Judy McCarthy's GOP role and that she was at the resort as Congressman McCarthy's spouse. But see, the report doesn't have to list that. Why is she there? You know why she's there. It's party time. Let's spend a weekend at this high-end resort off the shores of the Pacific in California. So it says here, in an illustration of how campaign cash can appear to circulate through the system, Robert Lowe, founder of the company that developed Tarania, has given thousands of dollars to McCarthy's campaign committee and leadership PAC. So it says here, one visitor on one of these weekend events was Kim Showers, who has identified herself on social media as McCarthy's cousin and has been pictured in Instagram posts with him at a number of gatherings, including at the U.S. Capitol and White House. In July of 2016, Showers, who runs a life coaching business, is seen on an Instagram in a poolside photo at Tarania with the caption, "Blue skies and drinks with umbrellas all day." This is arrogance. She never thought that thing would be discovered and then brought back to a story like this. You know, and she's a cousin. You see what I call it? Nepotism? They're friends and relatives. You know darn well whatever weekend she was there was paid for out of this PAC fund. She couldn't afford it on her own. So it says here, it's not unusual for congressional leaders to travel outside Washington or their districts to raise money and otherwise support candidates from their party. But the McCarthy Leadership PAC has spent an outsized amount on private jets rather than on commercial airline. What's wrong with commercial? And sit in first class. I'm not going to criticize it for doing that. I mean, I don't expect, these people to live like the rest of us. Well, I do, actually. They want to sit in first class, and as long as it's not taxpayer-supported, it's in these PACs, okay, go ahead. Private jets? The pack racked up more than $560,000 in private jet costs from 2012 to 2015, mostly through Golden State Air Charter. In the years when McCarthy was a regular customer, Golden State boasted of offering the ultimate luxury in private jet travel. McCarthy's Victory Fund and his campaign committee had about $335,000 in private flying expenses from 2012 to 2016 on top of his leadership PAC bills for such flights. At the Capitol Grill in Washington, D.C., the committee has forked over more than $20,000 for meals. The restaurant's menu features a porcini rub bone-in ribeye with 15-year aged balsamic for $84. Other meal course costs were reported as catering expenses. McCarthy, again, greatly outspent his counterparts. Yeah, this is that same McCarthy who thinks he'll be missed when he leaves Congress early, not filling out his commitment. So it says here, in the 2.5-year period, he spent $700,000 on catering. That includes some $110,000 dropped at Joe's Seafood Prime Steak and Stone Crab in the nation's capital. The second largest amount in the overall catering category, more than $390,000, was by Boehner's PAC. I sit there all doing it. This is how these people live. So anyway, this guy here has got a comment. His last name is Gosh. The campaign legal center director said the looseness of the rules for leadership PACs and the spending on upscale restaurants, hotels, and golf clubs that they allow can be hard to believe. Quote, when you look at it at a common sense level, you say this couldn't possibly be right. He said, it's low-hanging fruit when it comes to campaign finance reform. They're not going to reform any of this crap. Why would they? Life is good. And if they all wait their turn, and if they all just go along to get along, because you know Marjorie Taylor Greene, she wasn't invited to this. You know she wasn't. Matt Gaetz, he wasn't invited to any of this stuff. Because he doesn't toe the line. He doesn't play the game. So most of the other members of Congress know, hey, you know, one day I'll get to participate in that. If I just keep my head down, don't rock the boat, I'll get to enjoy some of this largesse too. And I want to say this in closing on this segment, because I've made it clear several times that it's not illegal. It's not unlawful. But just because you can doesn't mean you should. Let's turn the page. One of the big hearings going on in Washington, D.C. in the Congress has been about extending this Section 702 surveillance. What is Section 702? It's a segment of the FISA and the court, FISC, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. A lot of this was put in after 9/11, the Section 702, which allows the government to spy. It's supposed to be to spy on foreigners and foreign nationals, not U.S. citizens. But it's being abused. And Congress has been made aware of it. And everybody knows it. And nobody's held accountable. This is what happens when you expand government authority over American citizens. They abuse it. And then they come along with this crap that, well, national security is at stake, you know, and you know, we're getting hit by a terrorist attack. You know what? All of the terrorist attacks that have happened from 9/11 forward have happened even with this crap in place. How about the Boston bombing? Where these two, Sarnaev, I think they're his brothers, were traveling back and forth from Russia and into the United States. They were in here on visas. They were informed, I think by MI6, the UK's intelligence, that these guys were visiting terror training camps. And they said, you know, we thought you might want to know. Do you think the CIA and our intel agencies and the FBI open up an investigation to follow these guys? No, they were hiding in plain sight. Actually, they weren't hiding anything about what they were doing and what their intentions were. So even with 702 and all these other things, we still get these terror attacks. And so every time there's a threat to pull some of this stuff back in, we get the, well, you know, national security's at risk here. It's sky is falling rhetoric. It's not. It was a Ben Franklin that said, you know, he who would sacrifice liberty for a little security deserves neither liberty nor security. And he's right. I'm not willing to give up my individual freedom and my individual protection under the Fourth Amendment to the government for a little security. These people wouldn't know security if it fell on them. They just wouldn't. And every time there's a terror attack, yeah, he was on our radar screen. Well, what does that mean? Were you searching his social media and text messages and emails? No, because they didn't want to offend Muslims. So now this thing is set to expire. And you know, my position is, by the way, I have some knowledge of this process. Said this before, I'll say it again. Doesn't make me a know-it-all, but I have an understanding deep inside the bowels of this stuff, and I can expose, and I can smell, and I can see the rhetoric, the nonsense that they spew. And I'm talking about these intel officials, including the FBI. They're not really an intelligence agency, but they are involved in spying too. And I just bring it out. I go, don't hand me that crap. Name one. And when these guys come up to the hill, it's usually guys, these intel officials, FBI, Christopher Wray, and they testify. And that's what they say. Well, you know, national security, well, we got to, you know. Really? Tell us how many terror incidents you have stopped since the implementation of 702 into the FISA Act. Because there is none. Or very few, or they're meaningless. They'll find some low-level idiot who, you know, they try to sell weapons to. It's basically entrapment. And then they go out and arrest them and say, hey, we stopped the terror incident. No, you didn't. You planted this idea in this goof's mind. He doesn't have the intellectual capacity. He doesn't have the capability of pulling it off. So here we are again. You know, the FBI wants 702 extended. And I say no. No, I'm willing to risk. Remember what I'd say about risk? There's high risk, medium risk, and low risk. There's no such thing as zero risk. So I would ask the FBI, what category would you put this in, the 702? High risk incidents, medium, or low? Of course, they'd probably lie. Because you heard Ray couple weeks ago, oh, I've never seen so bad since October 7th. I've never seen the threat. He hasn't ever seen anything. So the House is struggling with this or throwing it around. You know, the House has a bill. The Senate has a bill. The House has two bills, one from House Intelligence, one from House Judiciary. The Senate has a Senate Intel bill. And they're trying to, like, mold these things together to come out with something that they can both live with. You have your critics on one side saying, we've had enough of spying. And then you have your people in Congress on the other side who fall for the nonsense. Is, oh, my God. Oh, Canada, terror attack. Oh, we're going to get blamed. Oh, I get sick of these people. And like I said, They should call me in to help question these people because they don't know what questions to ask. And the FBI and the CIA and all these other agencies, they know these people don't know what the hell's going on here. We can bamboozle them. Just tell them a terror attack might occur if you end this. They'll all run like their hair's on fire, and they do. So here's a story, Washington Times, House showdown expected between rival bills to overhaul U.S. spy powers. It says critics say spying tools threaten the constitutional rights when FBI or U.S. intel officials sift through the data without a warrant looking for dirt on Americans. This FISA Act is supposed to apply to foreign nationals. That's why it's called the Foreign Intelligence Security Act and the Foreign Intelligence Security Court. It's not supposed to be used, warrantless aspect, to spy on Americans. And if you think there's Americans involved in terror activities, you have to go get a warrant. And you know what these agencies do? Well, you know, we could have to go get a warrant. It slows the process down. No, it doesn't. I've obtained search warrants. With today's capability, the electronics and stuff in place, you can get a search warrant in short order. And unless these people can prove, as they're spying without a warrant on Americans, that this guy's going to do this tomorrow, that would be exigent. They can never do that. They just say that. Well, you know, it just slows things down. Good. That's what the founding fathers wanted. That's what they intended. Here's the process, the Fourth Amendment says. Get a warrant with very few exceptions. So they come up with this FISA Act to you know, after 9/11, they overcorrect it. And they come up with this FISA Act and, you know, oh, so it never happens again. How many times has it happened since 9/11? A lot. I just named the Boston bombing. I could name others, but in the essence of time here, you know what I'm talking about. Because when one happens, you know, it dominates the news. And the FBI always, yeah, he was on a radar screen. How come you weren't spying on him? Instead, they're spying on Americans. Without a warrant, just get the warrant. You want to spy on Americans? The Constitution is clear. Get a warrant. So it says, but national security advocates, as I said, stress the need for it in order to fend off potential global terrorist threats. Sky is falling rhetoric. It's BS. So it says violations of Section 702, which would sunset after 3 years, this is if they extend it again, would be punishable by up to 8 years in prison, which is a good step because currently there's no accountability for violating it. None. Nobody's ever held accountable when it's discovered. Nobody's punished. You know, they're discovered and then it's, oops. And then, you know, we're trying to prevent terror attacks. You people aren't competent. So then it says here, additionally, the Intelligence Committee legislation would create new criminal liability and administrative penalties and increase existing penalties for government officials who engage in a range of intentional misconduct. Well, here's the thing. The problem I have with that. I said, you know, criminal sanctions are a good thing to add to this because none of these people are ever held accountable. The FBI or the CIA or the intel agencies would have to approach the Justice Department with this and say, hey, we want this guy prosecuted, and they're not going to do it. Oh, it was just a mistake. It was an oversight. That's what we always hear from Ray and all these other goofs. Well, it was just an oversight. He didn't mean to. She didn't mean to. I get sick of this. And these agents and these violators of this who are violating your individual right to be shielded from unlawful and unnecessary government intrusion into your lives? They know nothing's going to happen to me. In one hearing a couple weeks ago, Christopher Ray was asking, does anybody get, they're talking about the Catholic Church thing, Remember that? Got to go back to the last podcast. Talked about that. Ray was asked, are those people going to be held accountable? And you know what he said? He said this. Well, they might lose out on their next pay rate. That's the punishment. He said they could. He didn't say they would miss out on their pay raise. He said they could. And you know what that means. You have to listen critically to these people. Because the follow-up question should have been, like I said, these members of Congress with this oversight, they're the wrong people. They're more interested in, you know, a weekend out in California at a fundraising event and living high off the hog. The question after he said could should have been a follow-up. Director Ray, you said could, but will they? And have him answer that. And then you know what he'll do? Because these people know how to dance. Well, you know, I can't say right now. I'll follow up and get back to you. And then they never do. Which is why all these hearings, it's all theater. It's all saber-rattling. It's all it is. Makes Congress look tough. By the way, looking and sounding tough, let's listen to this. Two clips. Hearings. One was the Mike Lee was questioning Director Ray. And another is a Fox Business News clip on the violations of our rights, our Fourth Amendment rights. Listen to this audio. There's two clips. Go ahead and play them.
In a report issued declassified in August of 2021, the Director of National Intelligence stated, quote, FBI personnel conducted multiple queries of an individual who had the same last name as the FBI personnel conducting the query. And on further investigation, what they learned was that this query was made after this analyst at the FBI had a conversation with his own mother, and his mother expressed suspicions about his father having an affair, cheating on her, having an affair with another woman. And so as a result of that, they looked into it, and this particular analyst admitted that he ran the queries because of this tip from his mother that his dad was having an affair. And because I've got a lot of material to cover, I'd appreciate if you could give me a yes or no answer to this. Was that analyst terminated?
I'm not sure that I can recall the specific instance that you're talking about, so I'll have to go look at that and follow back up with you on that.
And do you know whether the analyst's security clearance would have been revoked?
Again, same answer, but let me check into that, and we'll circle back to whatever we can share.
Let me ask it to you this way, yes or no. Would abuse of Section 702 by an FBI employee, would that be something that would warrant the revocation of security clearance?
Well, certainly abuse. I think we'd have to know what the circumstances were. Sometimes people have used terms like abuse in this discussion when it's been something other than what I would call abuse, but there have been, that's why we have this accountability procedures that have cascading.
This example that I've given you is abuse. I assume you would not disagree with that. The FBI is already required to obtain a court order in some circumstances before accessing the contents of Americans' communications in the context of 702. They're already required for that in some circumstances. Since 2018, how many times has that requirement been triggered according to government reporting? Do you know?
You're talking about the so-called F2?
Yes.
How many times has it been triggered?
Yes.
I think there have been two instances where I think is maybe the number.
103. 103 times it's been triggered. And out of those 103 identified times, the FBI should have obtained a court order. How many times did the FBI actually obtain one? Do you know?
That, I think the answer is none.
Zero. So you're telling me that the FBI has completely ignored the limited court order requirement that it's already subjected to. You have the audacity to come here, and you told us that adding a warrant requirement to 702, even for queries involving U.S. persons on U.S. soil, that would amount to some sort of unilateral disarmament. You have a lot of gall, sir. This is disgraceful. The Fourth Amendment requires more than that, and you know it. I know every single time for centuries, even prior to the founding of this country, there were similar protections built into the laws of the United Kingdom before we became a country. Even then, the government was making the same darn argument you're making today, which is, it's too hard. This would make it hard for the government. It's why we have a constitution, sir, and you must comply with it. We call those consent searches. And consent searches do not require a warrant, sir, and you know that. There is nothing that you have done that is not entirely within the FBI's control and supervision. You're asking me to believe something that is not believable because your agency has made it unbelievable, and I refuse to accept it.
Yeah, and this is about misleading the FISA court. It's about also what they didn't tell the FISA court, Jim Comey and his team. Documents show the top Justice Department official overseeing the Trump-Russia probe, his name is Dana Bente, said they knew in early 2017 there's no there there. In July 2016, an FBI agent said in New York said, this is completely, definitely political. The FBI's handler for Christopher Steele, Michael Gaeta, said, watch out, Steele is completely untrustworthy. Another FBI agent, which you point out, quit the Trump-Russia probe because Bill Priestap and Peter Strzok said, no, we're not going to do what you want. We're not going to do a deep dive into Steele's credibility, Jim. When Christopher Steele's own source said there is zero corroboration for this, for what Steele is saying. So, Jim, the FISA court knew none of this. The FBI didn't tell them that. So how did they get a FISA? How could they get a FISA wiretap and not tell the FISA court what their own guys were telling them?
Yeah, well, they can't. I mean, they did, but that's the dishonesty. That's the devastating component to this story is we build a system. We have a tool, this FISA court, that makes sense, if you ask me. It does make sense to have a very nimble, serious, private or confidential court to deal with counter-espionage terrorism situations. You rely on the FBI with DOJ's help to basically be straight shooters and to do their investigation and present a legitimate package to the court. That did not happen here. And let me just flag, you know, one very precise kind of procedural example of this. When you do any sort of wiretap affidavit and you put information in there like this Russian dossier, it's your obligation as you keep going back to the court and renewing or updating that information to say, hey, we found out we were wrong about something. Well, they knew very early on, maybe before the first application, but certainly by the second or third, that this dossier was funded by Hillary Clinton. It was essentially defamation laundering through GPS and Christopher Steele, that Steele and his subsources were unreliable. And so there was a lot they should have disclosed to the court. Okay. That's one of the big red flags.
So there you go. There you go. So here's further evidence that they need to just end Section 702, not reform it. It's been reformed before. It hasn't made a difference. When the inspector general goes back and looks, and I've read reports on this podcast about this, when inspector general finds continued violations of searching Americans without a warrant under this FISA thing, it just continues to go on. It doesn't stop. And it's not going to stop. It's part of the culture. They don't care. But how about the one where Lee was talking to Ray about this analyst who's spying on his mother's husband, who she suspects of cheating on her? And he's using this process to spy on her husband, his dad. Are you kidding me? And then, of course, you know, Lee asked Ray, anything happened to this guy? Well, I don't know. I'll have to follow up. What do you mean? What do you know about what's going on in the FBI, Ray? When something like this of this magnitude is discovered and a memo didn't come to you up the chain of command, look, I was a sheriff. I would have expected this notification to come to me. Hey, here's what we found, boss. Here's what we discovered. Here's what we uncovered. You can only get away so long with, well, I'm not sure, I'm not aware of it. Well, then what do we need you for, and what are you doing here? So anyway, an opinion from the Wall Street Journal. How to fix Section 702 surveillance. Section 702 lets government monitor non-U.S. citizens outside the U.S. to protect national security. non-U.S. citizens. But the authority has come under scrutiny after abuses by some FBI investigation agents who ran searches related to Black Lives Matter protesters and even members of Congress. Lawmakers want to reauthorize the program while protecting civil liberties, but some proposals are better than others. And they go through here talking about the two bills that are proposed. So it says here, again, this is the opinion board, editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. It says, our advice to Republicans, it's from the House, obviously, is not to go on record gutting a crucial anti-terror tool out of the peak with the FBI. The vote will haunt members if there's another attack. See that? How come it didn't haunt them after 9/11? How come it didn't haunt them before 9/11? They knew of the 9/11 hijackers. They were informed. There's documentation. Mossad and MI6, Mossad is the Israeli intelligence agency, told them, hey, these guys are flying. They're on a no-fly list. And they knew they were using commercial airlines to fly back and forth. They're on a no-fly list. And when they were informed, how come they didn't do anything? Hey, this guy just flew into the United States. Let's get over there. He's not supposed to be here. They just ignored it. The system was blinking red and they just ignored it. So it says here, renewing it through April is far more preferable to the potential disaster of letting it lapse. There's that sky is falling rhetoric again. Oh, the potential. See, that's why I said risk comes in three categories. High, medium, and low. Not the zero risk. Not what's possible, what's probable. Congress can use the extra months to ensure that the FISA reforms thoughtful changes that won't hamper national security. I don't care about hampering national security. I didn't misspeak. They already have the tools. They don't need to spy on Americans and with no predicate crime. You can't spy hoping to find evidence of a crime. You have to have evidence of the crime and then you can move forward. In other words, when you get a search warrant, you have to have probable cause. That means there's evidence of criminal activity and we need a search warrant to further conduct this investigation. You can't snoop on a fishing expedition looking for possible criminal activity and it has nothing to do with terror. It says here Section 702 has helped prevent another terrorist attack akin to 9/11. No, it hasn't. Name it. Put it in here. Tell us when. Tell us which one. This is platitudes. This is hyperbole. Oh, it has helped prevent terror attacks. The FBI uses that. Well, this is prevented terror. Tell us which ones. You know what they'll go into? Well, we can't. It's an ongoing investigation. See, they run circles around these people. It says here, war in the Middle East has increased the threat. Oh, just war in the Middle East has increased it. Then why was this guy spying on his damn dad on behalf of his mom to see if he's fooling around on her? And not just that. There's this. I've talked about this story before from Reuters. FBI misused intelligence database in 278,000 searches, the court says. A U.S. federal court found that the FBI improperly searched for information on a U.S. database of foreign intelligence 278 times over several years, including on Americans suspected of crimes, according to a ruling released Friday. But it's not supposed to be used on that. You go the standard route of a search warrant. The decision by the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court was released by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. The intelligence database stores digital and other information on individuals. The FISA Act allows the FBI to search without a warrant communications of foreigners abroad. Foreigners abroad, not American citizens here at home. So this is a court ruling found the FBI violated rules around the use of the database created under Section 702 of the FISA Act with its searches. Specifically, the court found the searches as part of probes into crimes between 2016 and 2020 violated the rules because there was no, this is what I just talked about, there's no reasonable basis to expect that they would return foreign intelligence or evidence of a crime, although the FBI believed that this was reasonably likely, the decision says. You can't have reasonable suspicion to violate the Fourth Amendment. You cannot do it. You have to have probable cause. And you have to have a go to, you have to go to court. You have to get a judge to sign off on it. Swear to an affidavit. So it says here the revelations came as U.S. President Joe Biden administration is trying to garner congressional support to keep surveillance powers under 702, which is set to expire later this year. The ODNI, the Director of National Intelligence, said the FBI tightened its procedures. No, they didn't. This stuff's been going on forever. And it keeps being discovered, and then, well, we got safeguards in place. No, they don't. Nothing changes. This is a corrupt agency, the FBI, who violates the constitutional and civil rights of American citizens with no accountability. None. And if they're so good, and if they need this stuff, then how did this happen? I talked about this in a previous podcast. A Q spy for Cuba lived the American dream. Remember, they just found this Cuban spy living in, naturalized U.S. citizen, but living in Florida? 42 years, undetected. 42 years acting as a spy. Yet they need the authority to spy on Americans here at home to prevent this type of activity. That's why I say no. No. End it. Call your Congress member, both Senate and the House, and tell them it's not worth it. And use that quote from Benjamin Franklin, because that's what you're going to get. Well, you know, we're doing everything to protect America. You're not protecting me. If you were, a pressure cooker wouldn't have been fashioned into a bomb by the Tsarnaev brothers, known to the intelligence community here, to kill and maim people at the Boston Marathon. You aren't keeping me safe. What you're doing is you're trampling on my individual liberties, and I don't like it. Thanks for joining me. When you talk about race, crime, and politics, some folks lose sleep over this, but not me, because I sleep just fine on my Giza Dream Sheets and Pillow from MyPillow, especially this new 2.0. If you haven't gotten yours yet, you are missing out. Just go to MyPillow.com and use promo code CLARKE, that's C-L-A-R-K-E, and save up to 66% off. The direct link is also available on my website, AmericaSheriff.com. Get a great night's sleep so we can continue the fight. Friends, I want to thank you for listening to today's episode of Straight Talk with yours truly, America's Sheriff David Clark. And a special thank you also goes out to our sponsors. My goal, as always, is to break down these complex and many times controversial issues and bring it to you straight with a little dose of common sense, no media bias, no talking points, just truth. And this podcast would not be possible without your support. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please leave a review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite place to listen. And please share this message of common sense on social media. For more content, be sure to follow me on Truth Social, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And just a reminder, we'd love for you to join our Straight Shooters VIP podcast club for only $5 per month. And with that membership, you'll receive invitations to attend private podcast events throughout the year as a VIP guest when we come to your town. Plus, if you join today, you'll also receive a free coffee mug and a sample of our private label coffee, as long as supplies last. Subscribe and join at americasheriff.com. This podcast is brought to you by americasheriff.com
with executive producer Judy Wilkinson of J.L. Wilkinson Consulting and producer Josh Wentz in partnership with our friends at Bulldog Media. If you are interested in partnering with Straight Talk Podcast or having me speak in your area, please contact Judy at jlwilkinsonconsulting@gmail.com, 706-518-2116. That's jlwilkinsonconsulting@gmail.com. Phone number 706-518-2116.